What's going on, everybody? It's Isis Daniel, also known as the Millennial Psalm, and it is another day to be grateful, to wake up and start your day. You know why? Because it's Tasting Thursday. Okay. And y'all, I just want to start off by saying thank y'all so much for rocking with me. You know, this whole podcast journey has been a little unpredictable for me for many different reasons, but y'all have stuck with me and have been dedicated to these dynamic conversations and my wonderful guests. I mean, y'all been with me. Some of y'all have been with me since before I was having guests. So I just want to say and take a moment to show my gratitude. I love y'all and I thank you for rocking with me from the very beginning all the way up to now, because y'all, it's only the beginning, y'all. We got a lot more to go. But today I want to just give a shout out to our special guests, TJ and Hadley Douglas, the founders of Drink Progressively and the Urban Grape. Yep, they are actually Urban Grape, if I said it too quickly. They started off in Boston. They are now in D.C. and they're at their wine shop in Shaw. So I'm really excited about that. We featured them a few times this week. And of course, we have way more collaborations underway. So y'all get in, lock on in, because it's about to happen. We're having a great time. But I want to make sure that we talk about the fact that my podcast is taking a little bit of a turn. As you guys should know, if you don't know, I'll reiterate, we are focusing on wine culture. But before we can totally grasp what wine culture is, we need to understand what culture is. Now, throughout this podcast, we will talk about the fact that there's a definition of wine culture, or culture rather, and then there's an interpretation of the word culture. Okay. Now I'm reading a book here called For the Culture by Marcus Collins. Excellent book. Shout out to Kevin Full Belly Blogger, who recommended that I get this book. I love it. And it's become almost like my culture Bible. I'm not going to hold you. I've been using the information here to kind of dissect how I interpret culture to be within the wine industry. But he has a nice little definition on page 49 that I would like to read to you before we jump into this podcast episode. Culture is a realized meaning-making system that is anchored in our identity, who we are, and made up of three elements: how we see the world, our shared way of life, and the creation of shared expression. What I'm going to do right now, from here on out, maybe for the next year or so on this podcast, and rock with me, we might change it up, but right now that's what I'm projecting. All of our guests are going to be asked the same question. What is your definition of culture? How would you define culture? What is your interpretation of culture? Okay. The reason why I want to do this is because a lot of times interpretation is confused for definition, but our interpretation is how we interact with the world and how we interact within our culture. So believe it or not, it's actually really important to understand how people interpret the word culture and how they experience it within our space. So from here on out, I'm going to ask that to all of our guests, and I'm so excited for you to hear TJ and Hadley's response, because it definitely opened the door for a deeper conversation than either of us, all of us, expected to have today. So listen in. I would love to know your thoughts. If you guys want to add in on the conversation, go to Instagram, DM me, wherever. I want to create like a nice discussion board where people can just come in after these podcasts and discuss. So I'll figure that out. But I'm just excited that we're starting to have this conversation. It's an honor to be in this space and to really just like dig deep and to get people's minds going and to have us as one community have a dynamic conversation that could potentially positively affect our community, right? So y'all, let's go ahead and lock in. If you know the song, you better sing along. Tasting Thursday. Get it on Tasting Thursday with your girl, the Millennial Psalm. I am she is me, and we are here for another Tasting Thursday. Let's get into it. TJ and Hadley Douglas are dynamic leaders behind Drink Progressively Group, renowned for their pioneering endeavors in the wine and beverage industry. As the founders of the Urban Grape and Progressive Wine Company, they have redefined the landscapes within groundbreaking concepts, emphasizing inclusivity and community. Hadley, as the founder and president, excels in communications, marketing, and philanthropy, advocating for equity and allyship. While TJ, as the founder and CEO, leverages his extensive hospitality experience to champion diversity and inclusion within the wine industry. Together, they embody a bold, progressive vision that is reshaping the industry's landscape. All right, y'all. How are you feeling? TJ and Hadley Douglas, let's get into it. How are y'all feeling today?
I'm feeling great. How are you feeling, Hadley?
I'm feeling good too. Excited to be here with you, Isis.
Oh my gosh. It's such an honor for you guys to be on the podcast for a number of reasons, but obviously I'm just so excited to have you on because you are now in DC with the Urban Grape. Come on, talk to me about that. I know I was able to actually visit at the opening. So thank you so much for inviting me. It was so much fun, so much energy. Oh my gosh. So tell me more about that experience and how you guys feel about being in DC.
I mean, I'm excited. It's a little exhausting flying down every single week.
Yeah.
But being down there, the energy just revitalizes me and revitalizes what we want to do with the Urban Grape of building community through beverage. I mean, the community down there, though it's diverse, it's different than what we have up here in Boston. And I'm finding myself, even though being in this industry for 25 plus years, I'm finding myself in a kind of new and welcoming space. And I'm so excited. We opened up on January 25th of this year. So we're still brand new.
I agree. I think that the fun thing about opening a store in a totally different region is not only the excitement that you have with this bright, shiny new thing, but also the cross-pollination of ideas coming back to the original store, because we've doubled the size of our staff and have all these new fresh faces and ideas. And the established store is so excited to teach the new store, and the new store is so excited to bring fresh ideas to the established store. And I just think for me, that's been the most exciting thing, is just kind of this bubbling up of all this fresh new ideas. And definitely the response from everyone in DC has been overwhelming. I mean, absolutely unbelievable, overwhelming, humbling, exciting. So it's been a really great, really great experience so far.
Yeah. And I would add to that, that the community that's coming in, our customers down here in DC, it's interesting because at the end of the day, it's just wine, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of the questions are the same as in Boston. A lot of the excitement of learning about the progressive scale is the same in Boston, right? So at the end of the day, it's still just wine, but with a whole new community, and I'm loving it.
And you know, I love that you said community, because I want to make a quick little pivot, if you will, right? So when we spoke, I think last summer about, right, or towards the end of last summer, I was in Italy and I was telling you guys about my wine culture case study, and everyone on social media knows I totally bit off more than I can chew, but I'm gonna figure it out, okay? And I decided to give myself a year to figure out or become more comfortable with culture, what that means. I learned throughout my studies and over the last few months of just researching and learning more about culture, that culture is just a reflection of people, what they do, right? How they express their community together. That's through artifacts, literature, all the deets, right? But what I've realized is there's one definition of culture, but there's so many different interpretations of it. And based on your interpretation is how you interact with your community, thus creating that new culture, right? So I would love to ask the difficult question that people do not like. And I know, y'all, I told them before the podcast, I'm catching y'all off guard, so get ready, okay? What is culture to you, or what does culture mean to you?
It's a question that I've actually never been asked.
So, me neither.
Like, I love that.
To define it, you know? Yeah. For me, my personal definition is energy and vibe, right? What am I into? What do I want to be into? What do I want to share? All of that, like in a bottle, is like my culture. What are my experiences? What do I want to have be my experiences? Bringing that energy and that vibe to my world and having it there and being able to share that. That's, I think, how I maybe define culture in my world. How about you, Ads?
Oh, this is so hard. And you know what's, I think, the most challenging part is, if Isis, if you said what is like the European wine culture, I could say it and with no problems.
Talk
right?
About
like
it.
We all have such a great understanding of the European wine culture. It's that carafe of no-name wine on your, you know, cute little cafe table. That's the greatest wine that you've ever had. And you're having it at noon and you're having it with this incredible salad or the bolognese that's coming, and it's perfect. It's always so pitch perfect in every moment. And even if you asked us about South African wine culture, I think I'd be able to put my finger on it a little bit more, having been there a few times. I think that there's an energy around the culture in South Africa that is really coalescing around wine. I think American wine culture is a little lost right now. I don't know that we really can put our finger on American wine culture, because I think that there's for so long been so much intimidation and gatekeeping around wine in America that we haven't been able to build this just deep understanding of what wine means to us in this country. And that to me is what I think we try and do at the Urban Grape, is just break down all those barriers. You guys, it's just wine. Come in, come learn about it in a new way, meet some new friends around our tasting table, have a good time. The music is up. We're just, it's a party, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's what we're trying to do at the Urban Grape. I just wish we saw a little bit more of that across the country.
You know, I agree with you, because whenever I think about the Urban Grape and your success, and again, congratulations. I mean, all that you've accomplished in Boston, and now you're in DC, they're going to take over, y'all. Listen, it's going to happen. But my question is, I know that we as individuals, right? I've interviewed so many people within the wine industry that I am proud to call colleagues, right? Because we are innovators and we're trying to create a safer environment for people to explore wine. But it also feels that we're just individuals fighting our individual battles when this is a war that we need to come together and accomplish, right? And fight together. So what is your advice? Because I would say the Urban Grape has found the secret sauce. I mean, this progressive scale is insane. And I would love for, you know, there are listeners who are not familiar with the Urban Grape. So I would love for you to break down the progressive scale, but then also what advice would you give to the industry for us to come together and fight this battle of inclusion and of culture, defining this culture within America?
Yeah. Why don't you do progressive scale and then we can talk about that other, you know, the larger picture.
Well, I would say starting actually with the larger picture on that, because
we never agree, but we always end up at the same place.
Marriage.
So we'll end up at the right answer, but we'll always come at it from two different ways.
I answered it as culture. Hadley answered it as wine culture, right?
Yeah.
And I think I can answer this next question right here about taking my personal definition, which I just came up with, and put it into like the Urban Grape and put it into the actual wine world, right? Like so many people in our community, right? There are our neighbors, people that work in the area, whatever. Those people may not have experienced anything in the wine world before, nor do they want to experience anything because they don't know it exists,
right?
So where's their energy, right? Their energy is somewhere else. So how do we bring them into our space and let them experience it? Well, in order for it to be fun and unintimidating, we have to have a great energy and a great vibe, right?
Yes.
And that is from having educated people, but not snobby people, educated people with big smiles on their face, understanding that there is no bad question or silly question, having great music, having a bright store where the wine bottles are the focus, right? And you have all of that. And then you simplify it by putting it on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being light on your palate. And remember, your palate is just your mouth, right? 1 being light, like skim milk, very light and watery, with the acidity levels of lemonade, right? It's really bright, really fresh, great for hot months, right? Those swampy months in DC. And then the opposite side of that scale, would be a 10, which would be more like heavy cream on your palate, like super mouth coating. And then the acidity levels of hot chocolate. I mean, think about what hot chocolate is. It's yummy, it's round, it's soft. So if you can shop in a place and get an experience in an with an energy with great music of I like twos and I like fives, I mean, the barriers are down. And now you're now in this new world that you didn't know existed.
TJ showed me the most beautiful commercial the other day that he saw. It was for Down Syndrome Awareness Day. And it was this whole, did you see that?
Yes, I saw it. It was the best. And my mother actually trains on diversity, equity, and inclusion and all of that. And I sent it to her because I knew she would be able to use that within her trainings.
I have chills right now just even thinking about this ad. And the whole premise of the ad was, when you make assumptions about me, then they become my reality, right?
Yes.
And so I can't tell you the number of times we've talked to Burgundy importers and said, well, why don't you pour this wine in predominantly Black and Brown neighborhoods? And they're like, well, they don't drink Burgundy. Well, you've never poured Burgundy at these stores, you know? So how do you know that they don't drink Burgundy? It's not sold there. So it's the way that all these assumptions become reality within the wine industry. I mean, all industries, but we're talking about the wine industry. That I think that's where we've drawn our line in the sand is we're not going to make any assumptions about the people walking through the door. And we don't want them to make assumptions about what shopping for wine will be like. Just come in. We will find our middle ground. We will find our common language. The progressive scale really helps us to do that, because you don't have to go shop in the Tuscany section and understand Tuscan wine, right? The grapes, of which there are a million, the names, which are hard to pronounce. We can just talk about what you like, what you want to do with it, what you want to spend. And then we find the common language within that. So it's just this very easy way to start to expose people to every kind of wine and not make assumptions about what people drink, because that's where there's so much gatekeeping and so much, just so much of people being let down by the industry.
And I would even go to the next level of that conversation, because I like to get to the root of the issue, you know, and it's not just that there's an assumption. There was a tailored decision for it to become an assumption so that people do not have access. And I think that, and let me know if I need to say that a little more clear, because it's not just that, oh yeah, they don't drink it. The original thought came from, we do not want them to drink our stuff. So we will say that this is not for them. And then you have all of these years, almost centuries, if you want to say that, of it not being tailored to a people. And now it's, we're trying to figure out, oh, why don't they drink it? And why don't they feel like it's for them? We've been taught year after year, century after, well, I won't say century, decade after decade, rather, that this is not a product that is for us. So I love what you said, Hadley, about that, because it's important not only that we say, yes, this is for you, but we also say we've been taught by generation to generation to say this isn't for you. So we might need to get a little bit creative and figure out how to create a new experience and a new space so that you can enjoy it, right?
Right.
So, go ahead, Hadley.
I was just going to say, and now look at the result. The literal face of America is changing.
Yeah.
And the wine industry is freaking out because they have kept that face out of wine for so long. And now they need them to keep the industry afloat. And they don't know how to do it. And they're petrified. I mean, every report that comes out is like sheer panic. And meanwhile, we're not panicking because we opened the door and everyone is walking in.
Yes, because it's that simple, right? I mean, I think we need to have better, honest conversations so that people feel less intimidated by embracing a truth that they've been afraid to acknowledge was always there. It's safer when we look at the apartheid, right? Having open dialogue creates healing. But when you are afraid to speak honestly, you continue to put up walls that create more obstacles because you're not getting to the point, right? And like you said, all you have to do is just open the door and say you're welcome. and mm-hmm. let's figure out what we can do to make you feel more comfortable in this space. Because I recognize that my understanding of comfort might not be yours. It's very, mm-hmm. it's very simple, but it's not mm-hmm. simple, right? We have, again, years and years, generations of generations of conversations that have been poured into people. And we have to break those stereotypes and those understandings. It's not their fault. You've been taught, right? So let's talk about it. But I'm sorry, I accidentally went down a tangent, little rabbit hole.
It's okay. What I want to add to mm-hmm. that, though, is that too many times, and I've seen this a couple times, especially after the murder of George Floyd, mm-hmm. that the industries are overcorrecting.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So like that does the opposite, you know? And so I don't have much more to say on that other mm-hmm. than this is what I recognize, and I that people want to go in and overcorrect, and that's not sustainable, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we try Absolutely. To do at the Urban Grape, we try to have a very organic way of diversifying not only our portfolio, but diversifying our clientele and our community, right? There's a reason that we are in the Shaw District,
mm-hmm.
in the Shaw
Come
neighborhood,
on, Shaw,
right?
There.
There's a reason that like that's it took us 2 years to find a space there,
yeah,
right? So like that is very strategic on that, because what better place in the DC area where it feels like, even though it's was a predominantly Black neighborhood, and you know, it's a melting pot of all different incomes, all different races, all different levels of education, all different palates, all different wine experiences, all different cultures,
mm-hmm.
right? And so we have this hub now where people can meet each other. I'll go back and then we can move on to something else if you want. But I'm glad this is going so deep. So for years, I've been the only Black person in our company, mm-hmm. right? And it's not that we decided not to hire Black people. It's that no one was applying for jobs here, right? And so that's why we created the Urban Grape Wine Studies Award for students of color to deepen the pool of BIPOC people in our community that can turn into workers and turn into consumers, right? But you know, we do these events, and we'll start doing them in DC. We have these VIP events and these tasting events where you can have a young Black 22-year-old man who is, you know, in his undergrad right now, talking to a 65-year-old retired private equity guy,
mm-hmm.
right? And they're geeking out about the same wine, right? What other place does that happen? Those two worlds don't really meet.
Mm-hmm.
Except over a glass of wine and being educated, because it's intimidating. So neither one of them either don't know about the wine that they're tasting, or they both know about it. But either way, they're both intrigued and they've met common ground, mm-hmm. right, at the Urban Grape.
Love it. And you know, I have to learn a little bit more about the Urban Grape Wine Studies Award. Okay, so we're mm-hmm. going to talk about that in a minute, but I want to actually ask you a question that I believe is the secret sauce. So we'll see if you will give the secret ingredient. Let's see. I would like to know how you learned or came to the conclusion that the Urban Grape and how you organize the store, I mean, the vibe of it, how beautiful it is when you walk in. I mean, y'all, if you are in DC, head down to Shaw, because it is an experience for one. I'm trying to tell you. But on top of having the progressive scale and all that you guys do, how did you know that this was the answer? Because again, when we look around our industry, and as Hadley said, everyone's walking around with their hair on fire, not sure what to do. You guys figured it out. So what was that process and how did you know that it would work?
I think it was super simple. I'll give my opinion. Neither of us came from the industry. So
okay. Come on. It was an Italy trip, right? Y'all went to Italy.
We were in Italy. I mean, TJ was in the restaurant.
I've been in restaurants since I was 14.
He was in the hospitality industry. We both knew a lot about wine, but neither one of us came through the court. Neither one of us came through WSET. I mean, mm-hmm. I have not one day of wine education training under my belt. Mm-hmm. I had a background in marketing. TJ went to two semesters of the Elizabeth Bishop Wine School at Boston University. That was his entire wine education. He was self-taught on the job. So we didn't come in as insiders. We came in as outsiders. Mm-hmm. And we came in saying, wine stores are terrible. There's no hospitality. There's no intrigue. There's no engagement. And so if we're going to do something, we don't want to do that. We want to do something else. And so I think so much of our secret sauce came from the fact that we didn't come from inside the building. You know, we came up to the building and we said, this doesn't look great. And let's build our own. So I think that a lot of the origin of what we've done came from that.
You know, what's so interesting. I wrote down, listen to the outsiders. Right? Mm-hmm. So a part of right now, again, this case study is underway, and I'm allowing this year for me to talk to people because culture is a reflection of people. But I'm still trying to map out how I'm going to conduct this study, and a large portion of the study will be talking and connecting to consumers and people who are potential consumers. But what I loved about what you said, listen to the outsiders. You can't always see yourself. It's important to go to someone who has an outside view to say, hey, how am I actually showing up? What needs to change? What works? So I love that answer, Hadley. I'm gonna be completely honest there. I love that. What about you, TJ? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, for me, it was, I didn't understand the system, right? And it started off, I worked for a, you know, I was a bouncer and a server, and I ended up getting after I'd started bartending for a little bit, I ended up getting a job with a chef, and we opened up the restaurant. And the day before, we didn't get our full liquor license; we had a beer and wine. And it was literally like, okay, well now I'm the bar manager and selling products that I don't know anything about. I'm not going to be able to make rent. So how do I make rent? And so I started, you know, first. So many people recommend like, oh, buy the Wine Bible. That is, I think, the worst first book to buy because it's saying memorize this as mm-hmm. opposed to learn this.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you can't pronounce it, you don't know where it is on the map, and you don't understand what the word varietal means.
Yep.
Why are you starting way up there? It's an amazing book.
Yeah.
Right. I think every wine professional should own it.
I have like two. Right?
Yeah, but I have mine over there, right?
Yeah.
But it's not the first book. And so I needed to take this archaic wine world that everything is taught the same exact way in all of these for-profit education classes, right? WSET's a for-profit business. Quartermaster Sommeliers is a for-profit business, and they're saying the only way that you're going to be accepted is if you pay me and you pass my test, and then I say, okay, now you're accepted in the industry. You're not promised a job, right? And so I saw all of that, and I'm like, well, this doesn't work for me. I don't understand this. I don't have the dollars to do this, but I also don't have the time to do this. And so I needed to bend the system so that I could learn the way that I needed to learn. And so I read a book, Windows on the World from Kevin Zerreli, and he talked about skim milk, whole milk, and heavy cream. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wait a second. I understand milk. I know this. So wait a second. So a lot of wines, obviously, generalizing this for your listeners. But wait, so a lot of wines from cool climates tend to be a little bit more like skim milk, and wines from hot climates or grapes growing here because of this. And then you can eat all the geeky stuff, right? And so I understood that. So I really, really, really leaned into that because I'm like, oh, I understand this. And I have a knack for remembering wines, right? And remember what I ate with it, remember the tactile sensations and all this stuff.
Good for you. Yeah, he's going to write it down.
His brain is not normal.
Yeah, it's not normal at all. But, when I was on the restaurant side, I ran a wine program after I just dove right in. And I had a very seasonal young staff, right? A lot of 21 and 22-year-olds. And they didn't know wine. And so when they were selling wine to a table, they had a really hard time because the guest would say, hey, how is this wine? And they'd say, oh, it's really good. They've never had it, but they're trying to create a welcoming environment by lying to the guest so that they can get a better tip, right?
Yep.
And so I'm like, well, this doesn't work. So instead of me trying to teach them, hundreds of wines over the course of the 90 days that they work for, for the restaurant group, I created a wine list categorically by body because restaurant wine list food menus typically are light bodied, high acid at the top, full bodied foods, lower acid at the bottom. So I just created a wine list categorically that matched the verticalness of the wine list. And so when someone said, hey, how is this wine? They say, well, I haven't had this, but the way our wine list is designed is this. And if you're having this, this goes with this because, like, and then I'm like, okay, this works. But then it truly worked when we opened up our first store in a suburb of Boston called Chestnut Hill in 2010. And our very first customer, I don't know, we're older now, so I say she was older, but maybe she was 40, I don't know. And she was there. And she goes, how are you set up? And I'm like, well, we are set up on a scale of 1 to 10 with lower price on the bottom and higher price at the top. They're like, oh, what do you usually drink? Well, I usually drink this. And then she goes to, like, you know, the 5W section, 5W section. And she pulled over her husband and she goes, oh, honey, look, we like this wine, this wine, this wine. Who knew we are 5Ws? That was our first customer in 2010. Hadley, wow. And they were like, ooh.
People are already drinking progressively. They just don't understand that that's how they're drinking because they get so caught up in the region of varietal and they don't understand what they're really gravitating towards is the like-bodied wines.
Yes, I love it. I will probably tell you guys about this off camera, but I have a tasting concept that I want to start testing out and seeing because the idea is how do we help our consumers to make better decisions while purchasing? They have to feel confident, but they don't need to be WSET level 4 in order to purchase and be confident. And that is the one of the issues I have within our industry because it's not rocket science to figure out how to communicate to people. It's just sitting down and discussing. But being from the hospitality industry, I totally understand your whole setup and your motivation behind how you even organize the progressive scale. I think it's ingenious. I'm not going to hold you. I think it's pretty amazing how you did that.
It's so people ask us as business owners all the time, like, you know, what advice would you have for a new business owner? My answer is, you know, one, surround yourself with a lot of people, ask a lot of people for coffees, right? And just take everyone's thoughts and then make your own idea out of it. But whatever idea, it should, I'm a fixer, right? So like, what am I gonna, right, Hadley, am I a fixer?
I'm such a fixer.
Come on, confirm.
Let's not talk about the feelings.
I don't need you to fix it. Just listen, right? So, but anyways.
We can talk about that on our marriage therapy podcast.
Come on, marriage therapy.
So I want to fix something and I wanted to fix the wine culture. I wanted to fix people not having access or feeling welcomed, right? And how do I do that? I want to do something and keep it simple. That's it. Just keep it simple.
Yes.
Right? What makes us different? We're really nice people in the store. Our staff, we hire on personality and education in that order, right? They can always, my old general manager way back in the day, he said, you know, you can always teach someone how to carry a tray, but you can't teach them how to smile, right? And so we've always taken that, right? So what makes us successful is we're outsiders, right? We see something that could be changed and fixed better. To make it better, and we keep it simple, right? And we're nice about it, and we're transparent about it, and we do what we want, right? If something doesn't work, we change it or we adapt, and we're a very adaptable company.
I love it. Oh my gosh, it's so exciting. I think that what you guys are doing is important, and I love hearing the behind, because, you know, you can read articles and know, but it's something very unique and special when you have direct conversation with people and they're able to talk to you about their journey and what motivates them. It just translates differently. And I hope that our listeners really connect with you, because I feel that I'm getting an even better understanding of who you both are. But that actually leads me to my next question, Miss Hadley, because this is Women's Month. Let's get a woo. Okay. So I would like to know just your perspective from all that we've talked about, but I want more of the marketing expertise that you have. What are your thoughts on wine culture and community and how we are building
it or not, right? From a marketing standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, do you think this was in 2020 maybe or 2019? I'm trying to remember. We got the wine issue of Food and Wine.
It was
2020.
It was 2020. Cause with everything going on, we're like, seriously now?
Right around there. We got the, you know, the much heralded wine issue of Food and Wine and flipped through the entire thing. And from producers to pictures to advertising to, they even had like a cartoon drawing in that year's issue. And there was not one person of color represented in the entire magazine from beginning to end. And I DM'd Hunter, the publisher, and Ray Lewis, Ray Isle.
Yep.
And just lit up their DMs. I was like, what do I have to lose? We've never been in this magazine. We probably never will be in this magazine. I have nothing to lose. Next thing I knew, we are on the phone with them. They've called like an emergency meeting, and we're on the phone with them, and we went through page by page, and TJ's like, look at this, you guys, you know, look at this magazine that you produced. There is not one person who is not white represented in this entire magazine, even in the cartoons, you know?
Yikes.
And I think that is what we're trying to overcome here.
I think I'm correct when I say this, is that they were like dumbfounded. They're like, what?
Dumbfounded.
Wow, we didn't realize that.
And really, I will say, and I'm not trying to take all the credit in my angry DMs, but they really have changed Food and Wine from that time forward.
You remember the next issue that came out? It was the January issue.
Yep.
The cover of Food and Wine were a black, I don't know if it was male or woman, female, black chef hands over like a bowl. And mm-hmm. it was like the January issue or something like that, that, you know, and they've done a good job.
They have done a really good job
since.
Really good job. So I think that this is when I look at the marketing of the wine industry and when I see the issues, it all comes down to this. And it's not just people of color. It's an age issue. It is a gender issue. It's just a monotony in how they market that I think is just so discouraging. And, you know, we've been talking about Gen Z a ton and how, you know, within our own company and how we engage with them and get them excited about wine. And Gen Z right now is getting such a bad rap. Oh, they don't drink wine. They're not interested in wine culture. Yes, they are. Our store is filled. First of all, there are only 5 years of drinking age in Gen Z right
now. Talk
about it. 26.
They did the same thing to millennials.
Yes, they're only 26 years old at their oldest. At 26, I was drinking Bud Light at the Beacon Hill Pub until 2 a.m. I was not drinking.
Come on, take us back.
Love it. So, you know.
Want to tell them about whiskey, TJ? Or bourbon, TJ? No.
There's like TJ and I did not drink wine at that age. And I mean, a little bit, but we were not bought into the culture ourselves at that age. So there's all this hand wringing about Gen Z. They are flooding our tastings. They come every Thursday. They are the first to arrive. They want to learn. They want to try everything. And then you know what? They leave with a canned cocktail. Fine. They are engaging. They will get there. Can we give them a minute to figure out how they want to engage with this industry? Who cares if they're leaving with a canned cocktail? They left with something. They came.
What, and they're telling all of their, I'm using air quotes, are not friends, right? All their followers, right? That's how they're communicating. That's how they're showing. And how do you build a business, right? It's word of mouth. We don't advertise. Okay. We've never advertised in 13 years. We've never advertised, paid for advertising, right? It's all word of mouth. And you know, like coming from your restaurant days, someone has a bad experience, they'll tell 20 people. They have a good experience, they maybe tell one.
Yep.
So you have these Gen Zs who don't drink wine, who aren't interested in our industry, coming in, learning, taking down notes, posting about it, to either, you know, 500 people or 15,000 people, like they're into it.
They are.
And then you look at the rest of the industry, you're like, hello, do you guys not see this? And it's okay. They're into
it. And, you know, they just, they need an entry point.
Yes.
We have not provided them with a place to enter. And so I think that that's what we're trying to do. Again, just throwing open the door and saying, come on in, and building events that really appeal to them. Like we started the after brunch in, because we got down there and everyone was like, you have to do something around brunch. It's a culture down here. So we started the after brunch from 2 to 5 every Saturday. And this is like, we had someone come in and do little, those like eternal bracelets.
Yeah.
And, you know, she marketed to her followers who were all Gen Z. They came in, they're drinking Prosecco. They're learning about wine. They're engaging. They love it. It doesn't matter if they don't buy that day, because they're going to get a promotion. They're going to buy a house. They are going to grow up. Like, this is the one thing about all of us.
Oh,
we are all going to grow up, and they're going to start to have those moments where they want a glass of wine. And if we could just give them a second to get there before we proclaim that the generation is a failure to the wine industry, I don't understand why we're putting that much burden and pressure on a generation that is only 26 years old at the oldest.
Yeah, I think it's laziness. And I'm going to say this and then ask my final question. But when I talk to different wine professionals, especially OGs, I've realized the reason why millennials were a problem is because I think we were probably one of the first generations that required actual change. I think everyone else above us was able to kind of adapt into the wine space and culture that already existed, and millennials and after us were kind of like, it just doesn't fit for us, and we don't feel obligated to do something that doesn't speak to us. It's just, you know, a culture, a generation thing, right? But I think it is a form of laziness. The time that is necessary to invest in people and know what they like. People are predictable, but they're also very unpredictable at the same time. Once you understand their patterns, then you're able to kind of move forward and figure out things easily. But figuring out that pattern is a very intentional decision. That's why I'm doing this case study. It's not supposed to be easy, which I've learned, right? So doing the work. But I love what you're talking about, connecting to this next generation. Because we have to, if we have any interest of them actually drinking wine in the future, we have to make them comfortable now so that they grow in the space. I have so many thoughts. You just touched on an important part of this study that I'm trying to decode. And that really is making sure that we create that space, because this opening the door will impact the longevity of our industry. Even when we talk about non-alcoholic wines, which I think is something that needs to be talked about more, again, as TJ said earlier, we're constantly overcorrecting. The reason why I believe we have this neo-prohibition movement is because, yes, we have, you know, there, you know, people try to talk about, you know, overdrinking and overconsumption and alcohol not being good for you. We can have that conversation. But I also feel that we are in this predicament because the industry has not been able to be more open. I think people are overcorrecting and saying, just don't drink alcohol at all. But if we embraced non-alcoholic wines for people who cannot drink alcohol, when they decide to finally go back, what is going to be their decision? What are a choice of beverage? Is it going to be wine or beer? Because beer has non-alcoholic options, and they've been drinking those non-alcoholic options, and now we're moving forward and we're just going to drink regular beer. I think we as an industry need to focus on our people and figure out what can we do to begin the steps of having them be long-term wine enthusiasts, right? So you actually have a solution, right? So we have the Urban Grape Wine Studies Award for students of color, right? And you are investing in this next generation. So please tell me more about that and how people can sign up. How long do we have? Like, give me all the deets that you got.
So we actually started the conversation of this in 2018, where we got a resume of a, call him 30 something year old black man, and he applied for a stock boy position. But that's what he wrote for. And I'm like, we don't have a stock boy. Right. And, but it really, hit me, Isis, in such a hard and dark place. Like I got angry because this was this grown man's worth, boy, stock boy, right? And so
Talk about it.
in 13 years, let's call it 12 years. In 12 years, every single white applicant we've ever had has all in terms of the store has always applied for a sales or a management position, even if they have no experience in either, because that's their worth. And here I get this guy who applies, and his worth is a stock boy. And so I just got angry, and I'm like, look, we need to hire more black and brown people, but because of who we are, one of the top stores in the country, we can't just, well, two things, right? It's not a quality if we're just hiring to fill a void, right? Like it's actually there's got to be some equality and some equity in there, right? So in order for us to get more brown and black people to apply to the Urban Grape and have the potential of being hired, we need to make sure that they are educated and know that the wine industry exists, and they need to have some experience. And we weren't really finding that in Boston because, as I was saying, I was one of like two or three people of color, black people of color, or black people in the wine industry in Boston at that time, 2018. And so we said, you know what? We need to create an actual pipeline, right? The pipeline's not broken, it just doesn't exist. So how do we do that? How do we get someone who is a viable candidate to be employed and join the team at the Urban Grape? Let's start them with education. Okay, well, how are they going to pay for it? Let's fundraise. Let's start an endowment. How are they going to get practical work experience? Because education, I think, is nothing without actual experience and how you're going to actually apply it. So let's have, paid internships, which are really apprenticeships because you're learning a trade, right? And then what do you do with all that stuff? That's why we have mentorship and coaching as well. And that's where this came from. And we worked on it for about 2 years, but as small business owners, you make an extra couple bucks, you reinvest it in the business, right? And after the murder of George Floyd on June 1st, the day before, there was a protest in Boston, a peaceful protest. And the next day, we had the highest sales day in our history because people were like, hey, wait a second, you're a black-owned business. You know what? Let's support you, which is great. What's the best way for someone to support a business with their wallet, right? And so they did that. And so we took those extra funds and we said, hey, Boston University, we now have money to create this. I'm leaving out a bunch, but we now have money to create this. And that's an offline chat over a couple glasses of wine. I'll tell you that story.
I would love to
But we
hear.
did this, and cohort four just got a job. One of them got a job in the real estate division of Jackson Family Wines out in California. They relocated her. Another one actually joined our management company, Drink Progressively Group, our parent company, and in the marketing side of things. And now we have cohort five applications. Hads, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, let me break down the down and dirty details. So it's a year-long program. PJ, thank you for the emotive side of that. I will now give the details. It is a year-long program. It involves three levels of wine study at Boston University in their wine certification program. So you get really in-depth wine education. And then it's four paid internships of 3 months long each, one at the Urban Grape, one at MS Walker, which is a distribution company in Massachusetts, one at Row 34, which is a great restaurant company up here, hospitality group up here. And then the candidates or the interns go out to California and work at Jackson Family Wines and production and harvesting and marketing out there for 3 months. And then we help find them jobs. So it's a really intensive program. We
Love
take
it.
only two at a time. And everyone is paid during the year. And Jackson Family Wines gives a stipend for everyone to move out to California. It is in Boston only for right now. We will be expanding it down to DC, hopefully next year, next January for applications in DC. But we would love anyone to apply who wants a career in the wine industry and just doesn't know how to start. You come out of this program having seen every side of the wine industry, finding your place, and really prepared to make an impact for a career, not just get a job, but make an impact and have your first step in your career. So applications can be found on our website, theurbangrape.com, under internship in the main menu. And we'd love to have people apply.
And I would add to that, that in 2021, we created Progressive Wine Company, which is one of our companies, and it's a brand out in California. And our students actually go out there and learn how to make our wine. And then a dollar from every bottle and hoodie and t-shirt goes back into the program. So with the five SKUs that Progressive Wine Company will have this year, currently we have Pinot Noir, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé available in DC. And we'll have Cab and Shard coming out end of this year and the beginning of next year. It's about 30,000 bottles, 2,500 cases. So $30,000 will go back in to help supporting them. And then so every year that we grow a Progressive Wine Company, it's allowing us financially to support them on their wine journeys.
I love it. And everyone, you are able to also access these links in my bio and also will be in the description. So it's easy click for you to apply. But also anyone who's interested in supporting, of course, go out and purchase these wines. We will actually feature two of the wines for our Tuesday tasting on TikTok. And I will give all the details and dates and times and all of that for you guys. But please go out and support. This is amazing. What I love most about what this program is, it's like you said earlier in the in this podcast, was that you were saying that, you know, you can go to school and you have to pay for it, and then you're kind of just on your own to figure it out. And this is a step-by-step way to make sure that as you begin your wine journey, you don't have to be like me and other people out here figuring it out, which I still love and I appreciate. But as a wine professional in this field, I think that this is a great idea that you guys have begun and have been continuing to do. And I definitely can't wait for next year. Being a DC native, I am here to help in any way that I can. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. So next year, if we need to have another podcast or have, you know, a Tasting Thursday interview, anything at all, just let me know so that we can make sure that the people of DC know to go out and apply and begin their journey. This is amazing. Okay.
Thanks, Seth, so much.
Thank you y'all so much for coming on and being here for Tasting Thursday. We did rename the podcast back to Tasting Thursday rather than just the Millennial Sound Podcast. So thank you so much for joining us for Tasting Thursday. Is there anything you want to leave with the people before we go?
Gen Z, just walk through that door. We will show you the way.
I love it.
And the Millennial Psalm is such a better name than the Gen Z Psalm, don't you think? But you should trademark that one too. Just in case.
Listen, so when I first created my name as the Millennial Psalm, I did it because of the Silicon Valley wine report. I was like, oh my gosh, this is back in 2018. They're not connecting with millennials. I'm going to connect with millennials. And now I have totally settled into the fact that we need to do a better job of connecting with all wine consumers, no matter what age you are, gender you are, however you identify, doesn't matter. And so the Millennial Psalm is actually now a description of me. I am a millennial, one of the last, but I am a millennial. And I think I'm comfortable with that because I recognize that I'm someone who is here to connect with generations. And I'm cool with that as a mission, you know, so. Yeah.
We have to do a whole other podcast on that wine report, which is let's light the world on fire and offer no solutions. It's such a valuable report. It is valuable. I read it every year. They put so much work into it, but they can't really connect they can't pull the thread on how to connect with the younger generations and what people should be doing. They see the issue, but they don't see how to fix it. And they don't talk to people like us about what we're doing to fix it.
They don't talk to people like us, and they also don't talk to the people they're talking about. It's mm-hmm. And again, this mm-hmm. is why I'm doing my case study, this culture case study, because it's one thing, like you said, to gather all this data, because that's what I thought this case study was going to be. It was just going to be about the data. That's why I thought, oh yeah, this will be quote unquote easy. Maybe 2-3 years, we'll figure it out. And it's like, no, this is something that is so much more dense because it involves connecting with people. And the only mm-hmm. way you can do that is if you talk to them. So yeah. That's why you guys are here. I'm talking to y'all. See, we're beginning. The wine industry is shifting already. Okay.
Thank you, Isis.
Yes, but thank you guys so much. And everyone else, you'll hear me, you know, in the next segment. Let's go ahead and get into it. So all I have to say is that was a bomb conversation, right? I don't know. I think having conversations with industry leaders and getting their interpretation of what they define culture to be helps us really define what is the environment that we're actually like participating in. Because obviously, again, as I said in the beginning of this podcast, there is the definition of culture and then there's our interpretation. And unfortunately, despite us having a actual definition of culture, we live and experience culture through our interpretations of it. So what I plan to do is to continue having more conversations with dynamic people within our industry so that we can better assess where we are as a culture. Not just what this person likes, what this person doesn't, but more specifically figuring out where the definition actually, or interpretation rather, aligns. From there, we can move forward and actually recreate our current definition of culture, right? Or, you know, I keep mixing up the words definition and interpretation, but honestly, I hold that mix up on my sleeve because I think that we all do that. And even throughout this case study and continuing to have this conversation, what I hope to do is have it so often that we start to speak singularly, that we start to become more on the same page, and we understand that yes, we have our interpretation, but our definition of wine culture is this, based off of the data, the conversations, and ultimately the cultivation of this new understanding of wine culture, embracing tradition, but pushing against the gatekeepers that try to keep us from evolving. Just because you evolve does not mean that tradition is thrown away. Can we talk about that? Can I get an amen in the back? All right. But for this next segment, you guys know I said I was going to start doing my music playlist again, which I still am, and I promise, so I will continue. And so for our playlist wine pairing, we will have Golden Lady. Starts off with Golden Lady by Stevie Wonder. This is not a playlist that's made by all women, but I did want to, for Women's Month, to create a playlist that was for women, okay? So you either are being celebrated or we are celebrating women thought. So please, y'all, go ahead, take a listen. It is, you know, a little more jazzy than you guys are typically used to. I know I had a jazz playlist before, but I wanted to show talent and storytelling and true perspective and honesty. And I believe that that is everything woman. Fight me if you want to, but that's my perspective, okay? So I hope you guys take a listen and enjoy this playlist. Who else do we have on here? We got a little Esperanza Spalding. Come on, we got a little Duran, Bernard, Janelle Monae, Chloe Soule, Erykah Badu. My girl Haley is in here. So, oh, and of course, we got Nancy Wilson. But I want to give a special shout out to Jasmia Horn. She is a beast vocally, y'all. And I have fallen in love with this song that she has on there called I Remember You. So I hope you guys take a listen and enjoy, because the craftsmanship of her instrument, which is her voice, she knows how to exercise it so well. So I want to give a special shout out to her. Of course, go out to the Urban Grape, support. All links that we discussed in this podcast will be in the description below. But I hope that you guys enjoyed, and thank you again for being our dedicated listeners. I love you guys so much, and I can't wait to continue to just evolve and to grow this platform, because we are one community. We are one voice. And although we might be all over the place right now, my goal is to unify us. So I love y'all, and tune in next week for our next episode. I love y'all. Hey, it's Tasty Thursday. Get it.